me, particularly for our listeners, in layman's terms, what Alzheimer's disease is, please?
Alzheimer's disease is a loss of some intellectual functions that starts generally in the common forms of Alzheimer's disease after the age of 60. It affects memory, it affects cognitive work, working with your mind, remembering things, and it's progressive and eventually makes people very disabled.
What are the symptoms of Alzheimer's?
Well, symptoms are the things that are complained about by the patients. That actually begins before that.
Right.
So the patient's family will note that there are difficulties in remembering locations and how to get from place to place. There's increasing forgetting, particularly of names and of memories that have always been quite clear. There are a number of cognitive functions, so that it's not really a symptom, but when you have a new patient that's being brought to you to look at for Alzheimer's disease, if they keep their own checkbook, it's frequently very, you can almost tell the months when things started to go bad just by looking at the checkbook. The symptoms that the patients have come in, you know, can probably much later. In fact, there's a denying that there's something really wrong. So it's very insidious.
Is there a difference between Alzheimer's and dementia, or are they one and the same?
Well, dementia describes the loss of cognitive difficulties. Dementias can be secondary to a lot of different things. So some drugs, some other diseases. Alzheimer's is the most common dementia. But when a patient comes in with dementia over the age of 60, it's probably about a 90-95% chance that it's Alzheimer's disease. But one of the things your physicians would do would be to do some tests to rule out that it isn't something that could be fixed.
So what kind of tests might they do?
They would do some blood tests. They would look for thyroid function. They would look for some endocrine functions. They would do radiological tests, x-rays, and now CAT scans or MRIs. Dementia can result from a tumor that's in the frontal lobe, things like that.
You said that primarily people over 60 are affected.
Yeah.
Are there any cases of younger people having Alzheimer's?
Yes, there are. There are genetic forms, true autosomal dominant forms, where somebody gets a dose from one of their parents. The age of onset, there are three different types of these rare forms, and the age of onset varies from the late 20s to the mid-50s, depending on which type a person has.
So in that respect, then, is it hereditary?
Well, and that's what I'll be talking about today. So in the early onset forms that I just mentioned, it is clearly hereditary, and there are, you can map out families like you would with any hereditary disease. Hereditary means that you've inherited something, and there's now a complex hereditary factor that we've found that involves your age of onset. At the age of 85, about 1 in 3 people begin to have loss of these functions. At the older ages, it's a little bit slower in happening. But between 60 and 85, you inherit one thing from your mother and one thing from your father at this single, it's called a locus, but it's a single point on your chromosome. And depending on how long that piece is, it affects your age of onset. And since it's such a long period of time and it looks so different, and many people may or may not have any family history of it, it isn't your typical heredity. It's called complex inheritance.
Okay. Now, I know that your team have identified something called APOE as a susceptibility gene, and that in the later onset of Alzheimer's disease. But could you explain this a little further in a nice, easy version, please?
Well, instead of calling it APOE, we call it APOE.
APOE, okay.
And APOE is actually a gene that's involved in lipid metabolism. It binds lipids and carries it from place to place in the body. In 1992, our team found that one of the forms, and there are three forms of this molecule that exists, APOE4, APOE3, and APOE2, they all differ by a single amino acid or point. APOE4, when inherited in two doses, one from father and one from mother, actually has an age of onset for Alzheimer's disease averaging about 70 years of age. So it begins in the 60s, but half the people who have that genotype.
What would be the kind of symptoms then that you might need to look out for in yourself or in your parents as little trigger signs that you might be in the early stages of Alzheimer's?
Well, that's very variable, and to be prescriptive about that is a dangerous thing. I know a lot of 40-year-olds who lose their keys, and the first thing they do is they hit them hand against their head and say, "Oh, it's old timers' disease." But I really don't think, in the absence of something to do about it, that it's something that ought to be looked for. When something crops up in the natural course of cropping up, that's quite another story. Now, if we had a drug that could prevent Alzheimer's disease or delay the onset, then that would be very, very different. And that's the type of research that I'm going to describe here at this meeting. What we found is we've explained what happened with our APOE4 findings by the gene next door to it, which is the real culprit. And that's called TOM40. And TOM40 is the abbreviation for the outer mitochondrial membrane channel. That's the piece that it has in the gene, this long series of poly Ts. It's a single base called a thymidine, but it can be any place from 10 T long to 45 T long. And you inherit, as I said, from one from your father and one from your mother. That now gives us the opportunity to do what we could never do before, because if we're right, and we have to prove we're right, but if we're right, then if we do a clinical study that starts when you're between 60 and 85, and we take from normal people in that age group and we measure their TOM40 genotype, we believe that we could, at any given age in that period, say whether somebody is at a high risk or a low risk of getting symptoms in the next 5 to 7 years. Now that gives us an opportunity in a realistic time period for a clinical study to collect normal people, make sure they're normal by testing them, between 60 and, let's say, 83 years old. Take the TOM40 test, blindly put them in either the high risk or the low risk group. For the high risk group, they would be randomized to drug or placebo. In the low risk group, we would give placebo because it's not an individually accurate test. It just gives you this gradation. So it's called pharmacogenetics to enrich your study so that you have an easier chance of seeing seeing something at the end of 5 years. And then we're going to test them with a drug and no drug.
I was going to say, are you yet at that stage to define what kind of drug you might intend to use?
Yes. So we have, I've been experiencing, when I was with GSK, we used a drug called rosiglitazone, which has had somewhat of a bad go of it in the last few years because of cardiac things that can happen with it. The rosiglitazone is a drug, that's the name of the drug. It has, what it actually does is it doubles your number of mitochondria in your cells. And that seemed to work in our experimental models of tissue culture of neurons and things like that. We did a clinical trial in which we used APOE to look at those people who were at higher risk and people who were at lower risk. And in that first clinical trial, it seemed to work in terms of treating mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease, which is a different story than taking a normal person and seeing if you can prevent it or at least delay the onset. So rosiglitazone is not really available anymore.
So it's not a licensed drug, is it?
It is still licensed, and it was licensed, and a million people took it. But it's now under a lot of restrictions. But there is another drug called pioglitazone, which is a cousin, if you will, the same class. And pioglitazone is much safer and has been used just as long with great safety. And that drug is basically still on the market. And my little company has made a partnership with Takeda Pharmaceuticals, who own that drug. And we are currently in the middle of registering with the FDA and the EMA the plans for a trial. And that is not an easy process in and of itself, but it takes about a year, year and a half. But we're intending to start the trial, if everything goes right with the registration, in the summer of 2012. So we're only about a, a year or so away. And I have colleagues at each of seven different centers, and Dr. Makibo is with me today, is from the center in Siberia. And they have been looking at getting subjects, normal subjects, they're not patients, from the general population who would be willing to start the study when we're ready to go. And so that way we can do a very fast recruitment. And we can, because the study doesn't really start when the first person comes in. The study really starts when the last person coming into the study is recruited. And so we want to make that as fast as possible.
I'm just making sure it's still going up and down that we are recording.
Good.
It is, I think, not that I can see. Can you see, Alison? Double checking.
Yes, yeah.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about was, are there environmental factors that can also bring on the onset of Alzheimer's, the way the lifestyles in which we live, for example?
Well, a lot of people who had difficulty in trying to explain the biology of Alzheimer's disease based on many beliefs, that very strong beliefs that people have had that it's due to this factor or that factor or that. And when it really doesn't explain, there's always the, well, there's environmental causes. There certainly are some environmental things that can make a person present earlier. So as I said, before a person may have symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, if they get depressed and they're put on medications and things like that, clearly that can make the symptoms show up faster. And then there's some differential diagnosis that has to be made. But there have been stories over the years of aluminum and this and that, and virtually none of that really has panned out. And comes nowhere near the kind of data that we now have based on APOE at first and now TOM40.
Is Alzheimer's more prevalent in one country compared to another?
Alzheimer's is, well, country isn't quite the word. Alzheimer's has these genes, and these genes have different frequency in different ethnic groups. So the gene in the old days, now of APOE4, in Caucasian populations, 15% of the APOE genes that it would be in the population of Caucasians would be of the APOE4 type. If you were in Japan, it would be 5 to 7%. So it would appear then that Alzheimer's started earlier in Caucasians and was more prevalent. But in fact, it was the same thing causing the difference in what you would look at. Now, countries become a very, very different thing, and labels of people become different. And the best example, you know, there is African Americans. First of all, in the UK, you don't have any African Americans. It's not that they're a homogeneous group. And there were two waves, one to the east and one to the west, out of Africa for the evolution of people. And those two waves have very, very different allele frequencies, or the frequency of these abnormalities in each of those waves. And so if you were just looking and you want to say, okay, we're going to look at black Africans, it makes a difference whether you're looking on the East Coast or the West Coast. And it makes a difference, you know, even more of a difference if you looked at what's called admixture, where people, when there was slavery and things like that, they got mixed up with, you know, they're not 100% African. And that changes things.
Would diet have anything to do with that then?
In a short answer, we don't know. Probably not. It's a lot easier to look and adequately test things like diet and lifestyle and things like that once you know what is going wrong. It's a lot different to not know what's going wrong and say, oh, well, it's probably diet. You know, so there's a huge literature about that, and people would probably be irate that I'm so dogmatic about it, but the level and the standard of evidence is nowhere near the level and the standard of evidence for genetic associations.
So apparently there is no cure for Alzheimer's, but the drug that you're hoping to use in the future, is that the nearest we're actually going to be able to get to available treatments?
Well, there are a lot of other things that people have out there for treating symptomatically. And it, you know, sometimes they get a short period where they get a little brighter and they're a little bit better. But there's been nothing that changes the course of the disease. And that's rather dogmatic, but in a court of evidence, that's what we would say.